Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening and welcome to the John Whitmer Show. Gosh, isn't it nice to continue to be winning? And how great was that press conference? I mean, that's what happens when you wear sweatpants to a meeting in the White House. And then you act like an entitled little twat. You get sent packing. Happy you joined us tonight here at your local liberal resistance headquarters. Oh, we are packed tonight. The phone lines are already ready. The liberals are fired up. They are a fired up. Trust me, you should see the social media posts. Pleased to have you with us this evening. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can reach us at 316-869-1330 by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook and True Social at The John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. There's a ton of things we're going to get to tonight. We've got a very busy show. I would love to talk about, cutting off aid to Ukraine, let them fight their own fight. We'll talk. Well, let me tell you, next Sunday we're going to be live from Topeka again. Looking forward to that. We'll be broadcasting live from Topeka, thanks to our friends at Eck Insurance. Coming up this Friday, newly elected Kansas GOP Vice Chair Andy Hoosier and I will be hosting a roundtable discussion at the weekly Pachyderm Club lunch. Andy and I do this once a year. We always have fun when we host these sessions. So make sure you show up for the Pachyderm Club lunch. You can find information on that on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. And also, don't forget, the tickets are selling out fast for the 2025 Kansans for Life banquet at Park City Arena with Rachel Campos Duffy from Fox News. That's the wife of our new Secretary of Transportation. If you haven't got your tickets yet, you can find them at KFL.org. And speaking of the new chair, congratulations to Denedry Herbert, Andy Hoosier, Amantha Schuyler, and Roger Lomchek on their victory this weekend. And we have new leadership. I'm so excited to see them lead our Kansas Republican Party and the great base that we have in a new direction. So congrats to them. Tonight, we've got a busy show. Earlier this afternoon, I had an exclusive interview with Senator Roger Marshall. We talked about what happened at his town hall in Oakley. We talked about immigration. We talked about Doge, about the farm bill, whole bunch of stuff about why out of Washington, D.C. We'll play that for you to kick off our 8 o'clock hour. In light of Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's decision to restore Fort Bragg's name, we'll talk with Air Force Colonel Josh McConkie about his thoughts on the renaming. Author and filmmaker John West will tell us why he says America's Christian leaders are failing and what, if anything, we can do about it. Brittany Jones from Kansas Family Voice will join us to bring us an update on their recent legislative victories and some of their upcoming events. Former Assistant U.S. Attorney John O'Connor will tell us why he says President Trump was right to order lawyers helping illegal migrant children facing deportation to stop all their work. And Senate President Ty Masterson will bring us our Under the Dome legislative update from Topeka. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. say, you know, if you saw the video of Dr. Marshall's town hall, it got a little bit out of hand, in part because some of the folks didn't understand the concept of civility. I get, you know, we agree to disagree. If you've got issues with someone, you know, a politician who's talking, you can disagree, but you don't have to be a jerk about it. And I want to take a moment to address something that has been weighing heavily on my heart, and something that I know is deeply important to many of us. And we've been witnessing this over the past few years. Now that Donald Trump is back in office, we're starting to see Trump derangement syndrome back. We now have Elon derangement syndrome. We've got Vance derangement syndrome. And it's a disturbing trend in our political discourse. It's not just the disagreements that are growing. It's the division, the hostility, the lack of civility in the way we talk to one another. We saw it with Dr. Marshall in Oakley. If you watch the video, he answers their questions. They don't like the answer and immediately call bullpucky. He gives them facts directly from a source and they say, that's not true. Well, how do you know that's not true? You don't know. You're just saying it's not true. Well, folks, saying it doesn't make it true. And the lack of civility and the way we talk to each other, especially when we don't agree, that's hostile. And some may not know exactly what I'm referring to with the state. This is happening, by the way. It happened in the state party leadership race. And you may not know what I'm referring to with the state party leadership race. But trust me, it was vile. It got to a point where people were bringing race into it. And the toxic rhetoric, the highly negative rhetoric that was used in the Kansas GOP leadership race from Republicans directed at fellow Republicans over the state party race is, I mean, look, Democrats can do this nonsense, but we in particular should be better than this. And frankly, I think we've had enough. The kind of conversations, and I've been guilty of this in the past, so I'm not, you know, I recognize I too have been guilty of this, and I need to do better. But the kind of conversations we used to have where we could disagree, even passionately, yet still maintain mutual respect, seem to be slipping away. Now it seems like the goal of debate is less about understanding and finding solutions and more about winning at every cost, often by humiliating or demonizing the other side. And this is not the way forward. This is not the kind of party, or for that matter, the kind of country that I think we want to be as conservatives, as Republicans, and for that matter, even as Democrats. We should believe in the power of debate, in the strength of ideas, and the importance of maintaining respect for others, even when we stand at odds. Think back, if you will, to the great debates of history. I'm not talking about the petty squabbles. I'm talking about the kinds of debates that shaped our world. Winston Churchill, one of the greatest statesmen of the 20th century, was known for being a great debater. And it wasn't his intellect or his oratory skills. It was his ability to disagree with his opponents fiercely, but still treat them with dignity. He understood that when the stakes are high, when the stakes are the survival of a nation, we must still find ways to bridge our differences, not deepen them. And by the way, I know I too suffer from this affliction at times. And again, I will try to rise above my own weaknesses and pettiness in this regard, particularly on social media. But we all need to reclaim that tradition, that Churchillian tradition. We need to stop thinking of those who disagree with us as enemies to be vanquished and start seeing them as fellow citizens with whom we can engage. Margaret Thatcher, another great conservative leader, once said, being powerful is like being a lady. If you have to tell people you are, you aren't. Power or strength in debate doesn't come from belittling others or lowering yourself to their level. It comes from the ability to articulate your views with clarity and confidence without having to tear down the other person in the process. And it is possible to find common ground. I know. I was able to do that in Topeka. Some of the best legislation I ever passed was in partnership with some of the people from the opposite side of the aisle. And you have to find common ground, even with those with whom you disagree. but only if we're willing to try. Only if we're willing to approach one another with a spirit of humility and understanding. We want our children to have a better future. We want to have a safe and secure nation. There are things we can agree upon. And we may differ on the means to achieve these goals, but the goals themselves are shared. The conservative traditions of respect for tradition, for institutions, and for the rule of law, we share these things. We can disagree on policy, but we should always be able to agree on the fabric of this nation and respect for others. And if we lose that respect, we lose our way. We live in a time when social media amplifies every disagreement, every harsh word, every insult. It's easy to hide behind a screen or a microphone and take pot shots at others. But that's not the way to build a nation. That's not how we preserve our democracy. If we're going to move forward together, we need to rediscover the art of respectful disagreement. It's okay to stand firm in our beliefs. It's okay to stand strong in the face of opposition, but we have to do so with respect. It's time to bring civility back to our discourse. And I know, I've been an elected official. I know how it works. I've been around politics for decades. I'm sure we get exasperated now and then with each other, but that's just the friction of freedom. There's a famous story about Ronald Reagan and Democrat House Speaker Tip O'Neill. One day, Reagan was particularly frustrated with Tip. So he called him and said, "Tip, I thought we had a good relationship going." And then Ronnie read a news story and Tip and told him he was frustrated with him. And Tip said, "Well, old buddy, that's just politics. But after 6 o'clock, we're friends." After that, Reagan started wearing a watch that was permanently set to 6 p.m. Let's commit ourselves once again to the ideals that have made this country great. Let's be the voice of reason in a time of division. Let's be the leaders of civility, of respect, and of common ground. And let's remember, after 6 o'clock, we can still be friends. We'll take a quick break, and then former Assistant Attorney General John O'Connor will tell us why he says President Trump was right to order lawyers helping migrant children facing deportation to stop work. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. AFP is hosting an exciting rally coming up with Congressman Ron Estes as part of the Prosperity Initiative. It's coming up next Saturday, the 8th. If you want to make your voice heard, a great way to do so is to get involved with the folks at AFP. For more information, you can visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. And, of course, while you're online, don't forget to like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages. And follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. So legal services groups that offer representation and guidance to thousands of migrant children facing deportation said recently that they were abruptly directed by the Trump administration to halt their government-funded work. I'm personally trying to figure out the downside to this story, but with us now to tell us why he says President Trump was right to order lawmakers to stop this is former Assistant U.S. Attorney John O'Connor. John, thank you for joining us. It's nice to have you back on the show again, my friend.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
So, John, if I understand the story, U.S. taxpayer dollars were being used to offer legal advice to illegals to fight deportation. I mean, it's that's kind of dumbing it down, but consider the source here. Look, isn't this exactly what 77 million Americans voted for, John?
Well, yeah. You know, remember, these people aren't even being charged with a crime. I mean, you could
right.
make an argument if you issued charges against these folks for being illegal immigrants, which you could do. Then they would have a right under the law like anybody else to a public defender, and that's great.
Exactly.
But they haven't been charged with a crime. So really what the lawyers are supposed to do is fight the government's wishes. That's all they're doing. They are hiring somebody to counteract what the citizens in the United States want. So it has nothing to do with the Constitution. It's like saying, look, if the tax man comes, knocks on my door and says, hey, Mr. O'Connor, you haven't paid, you owe us $5,000. I'd say, well, yeah, could you go hire me a lawyer, please?
Right, exactly. That's actually a great analogy. It would be like me expecting the IRS to hire an attorney to fight my fight with the IRS over my taxes.
That's exactly it. And, you know, that doesn't make any sense. It's completely illogical, and it just shows you the extent to which the sort of the progressive idea of what morality is, I suppose, and what you need to do to be hip and cool is the only way I would say it. It ends up being absurd. So you need to be sensitive to somebody who has gender dysphoria. That's fine.
Right.
But do you allow a 6'4" male in the ring to beat the hell out of your daughter?
Right.
I think that's going too far.
And then do you use taxpayer dollars to defend him while he's still sued?
Exactly.
This contract pause then forces these nonprofits, if they wish to continue doing this immigration work, they would then have to use their own funds to continue representing these migrant kids in immigration court. Look, don't get me wrong. I do not disagree with having legal representation. If they feel they want it, or if they want to fight, whatever, if they're going to get deported, or if they want, fine. They should have to come up with that. These nonprofits should then have to go fundraise to do this work. What I disagree with is U.S. taxpayers paying for it.
Well, that's right. And that's another thing you bring up. To the extent that, you know, the NGOs who are in the business of, you know, providing services to the indigent and all that stuff, I think we've got to look at this pretty closely, because if any of those people are providing services for this kind of stuff, it's got to be cut off. We can't be giving funding nonprofits. We've gone too far. I mean, we are basically paying money to defeat ourselves.
Right.
And that is the big problem.
We're talking with former Assistant U.S. Attorney John O'Connor. Opponents, and it's Trump, so there are lots of them, they say the Trump administration is endangering the due process rights of these children. I'll go back to what you said initially. They haven't been charged with anything, so how are we endangering their due process rights?
Well, everybody has due process rights, like I say, I have due process rights if you want to collect money from me for the tax man. That's the best analogy you can come up with. And in that case, at least I'm a citizen. At least I've paid some money.
Good point.
So everybody's got due process rights. Sure, anytime the government's involved, you have due process rights. That doesn't mean they get a lawyer. The reason you get a lawyer under the Constitution is because under the Eighth Amendment, you have a right to counsel. And, you know, that's been interpreted, and I don't have any problem with the interpretation, is that you want to make sure that that a person charged with a crime has a defense. So that's sort of been a judge interpreted rule, and I don't disagree with it. And so therefore we have a very vibrant public defender program throughout the country, federal and state. So that's good. But we can't confuse the two. Now we're going in a case in which you're talking about civil wrongs.
Right.
And that's ridiculous. So, okay. Even on traffic citations, I think that's probably even a little bit going too far on this. I think probably you could say that you have a right to a public defender for a traffic citation, but I don't think you have one. I don't think that's considered serious enough, and that's quasi-criminal. You don't get that. You don't get the businessman who's filing his SEC registration doesn't get one. He's got due process rights. Everybody's got due process rights. But of all things, we're not giving them to the regular citizens that do pay their taxes and pay the government, you know, where the government gets the money to pay for this. All of the various things that citizens have to deal with are oppressive. We've got an oppressive government.
Right.
And a lot of the things that they're doing, I mean, if you have a puddle, if you have a ranch or something, you get winter puddling in there, you may have to deal with the EPA. But that's your expense, and it's the government is burdening us, but we don't, you know, the government doesn't have to pay our legal bills, even though it's maybe unjust that they're doing this. Now, you go to the illegal immigration, there's nothing overly burdensome about saying, hey, you can't come into the country unless we let you. That's a completely fair law. It has always been recognized as fair. And yet we're paying those people that aren't even citizens and don't pay taxes, and we're using our tax dollars to defend them in what essentially is a civil matter.
Right.
Whereas all of the other things, you name all the other things that the government touches our lives with, and we don't get the government to pay us money, you know, and we're taxpayers. So it just shows you the progressive way of thinking that turns common sense on its head and doesn't make any sense.
The tax analogy is the perfect one. If you have to fight the IRS, you have to pay those bills yourself. And this is a why the federal taxpayer dollars are being used to defend these folks is irrelevant, is asinine. And I'm glad that the Trump administration is putting an end to it. John, if folks want to connect with you, they can find you at JOC, John O'Connor, JOC Law. .com,
well,
correct?
Well, no, actually, that's my business address.
Okay. What's the best way to connect with you? May need a lawyer, man.
Exactly. You never know. No, I've got a good site that's got a lot of good articles and my book stuff and so forth. And people have fun reading my articles. I've got a bunch of them. It's postgatebook.com.
Postgatebook.com.
Yeah, that'll do it, John.
Perfect. John, I appreciate you. John, I feel like we're on a Chevy Chase movie. John, I appreciate you. Thank you again for joining us, my friend.
Okay. Take care, John. See you.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll bring you our weekly Under the Dome legislative update from Topeka with Senate President Ty Masterson. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, Phil, what are we going to do when she's gone and we can't play our Laura Kelly theme song anymore? I tell you. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. We'll have to retire it. I won't mind. Trust me. On 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. I think I already said that. Excuse me. We've got, if you ever miss an episode of the John Whitmer Show, don't worry about it. Just download the always free Odyssey app and get started. You can download it there. Different clips, whole episodes, different segments. You can find it all there on at the Odyssey app, wherever you find your apps. Every week during the legislative session, we try and bring you our legislative Under the Dome legislative update, kind of bring you the whatever happened. They did over the previous week and a preview of what's coming up in the next week. With us this week is Senate President Ty Masterson, back from a long road trip to Goodland. It was nice to see you and your better half in Goodland this weekend, brother. Nice to see you. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Well, thanks for having me. I always refer to her as my better 9/10 because I'm a numbers guy.
You're also a man who understands happy wife, happy life.
So, amen.
let me ask you. So, and it's been, we were going to have you on last week, but we got preempted by the ball game. And last week, the House sent you their budget. I'm curious if you had a chance to take a look at it, what your initial thoughts were on that, on what the House sent over.
That's actually a really good question. I've kind of poured through it over the last weekend and this one, because it's a unique process we're doing now, right? Where the house takes it first and then we look at their work product. And I was glad to see they reduced it quite a bit.
Right.
I am finding a few things in there that I don't think I can blame the house for. I think things that were embedded when I was running through that, I actually found like $67 million that's being demand transferred to K-12 that we're not even getting credit for. I'm thinking, how is this even in here? What do we should at least be getting credit for everything that's coming on. So we have some things to look at, right? I mean, we have an opportunity to even reduce it further or prioritize. So, But hey, we've got only 6 weeks left in session, so we've got some work to do.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned schools. I was reading through parts of the budget, and I found Democrats tried removing funding for the Safe and Secure Schools Initiative. I mean, you would think Democrats would actually want to prevent school shootings, but they voted against funding in there. I mean, they're so hypocritical on some of this stuff. It's just laughable. And yet, of course, you guys will be demonized for not adequately funding schools. And yet here you have Democrats voting against funding to prevent school shootings.
Yeah. I couldn't have said it better myself, right? The hypocrisy. They want anything in that vein to be kind of the cherry on top, over and above everything else you're already putting in.
Right, right. So turnaround, for our audience that may not be familiar, it's when the House sends all the stuff they've been working on over to the Senate. Senate does the same. The highlight, although, of the week was the veto override. I haven't had a chance to talk to you about that. I mean, that was, how many times did our middle-of-the-road governor defend, biological males competing in women's and women's sports? And then she defended this process, which was allowing the procedures in Kansas so you could have minor children being operated on, having these barbaric processes done. Finally, both chambers were able to override it here a week or ago. Congrats on that.
Well, thank you. I mean, that is the key. They'd have you believe we're talking about even adults, but we're only talking about children, right? I mean, this is, and I can't believe it took us 3 years. I got criticized for saying, oh, this went way too fast. We've done this 3 years in a row. This has not been too fast. Had people want me to leverage it for other things, I said, we're not leveraging this. We've got children on this conveyor belt. We are casting this vote. And it was the first real test of kind of the new Republican caucus after this wonderful, I want to say the big, beautiful election, right, that we just had. It was literally, I mean, the electorate. And by the way, thank you to your audience. Thank you to everybody out there that helped turn Laura Kelly from a brick wall to a speed bump when it comes to things like this. I mean, it was like, okay, as soon as we sent it to her, boom, veto. And we're like, okay, bump, we're over. Let's go. We're gonna protect these children no matter what you say. So, that was a huge thing. We did, and turnaround. That's a good. We sent them some other things that I fully anticipate vetoes on around elections. We sent them into that extra,
yes,
quote unquote 3-day grace period. Make election day election day. We sent them get rid of the Biden bucks, federal money that can do elections. I mean, she'll veto those. I'll be anxious to see. I hope the House processes those quickly because the session will end quickly, and we want a real opportunity to override those.
I was glad to see that end of the 3 days. I mean, look at the school bond. We've been waiting to the end of last week to find, or excuse me, the end of this week to find the results on the school bond. And,
right,
you know, I mean, Florida can count their entire election in one day, and we can't do a school board election, a school bond initiative. We have to wait till Friday for a Tuesday result.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing the Senate has sent many times, and we've just not been able to get it over the hump. An interesting one we sent them that actually is relevant is we sent them how we appoint U.S. Senate seats.
I saw that.
That hit me. It hit me like a ton of bricks. The last time I was on 5243, the flight, our direct Wichita, I was literally on that flight with Roger Marshall and Jerry Moran. And I thought, wait, if that would have been the plane that went down, Laura Kelly could appoint two Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And if we'd have had the position we'd have been in prior election where you were 51-49, you literally could have had one plane change the balance of power in the United States. So we advanced that one to the front and got that one across to the House as well.
And that one, just from what I'm understanding, that'll be an interesting one. I'll be curious to see how that goes. By the way, we're talking with Senate President Ty Masterson. I saw another one that – another concurrent resolution that would deal with H.R. 5008, that would protect basically from burdensome rules and regulations. Now, that's a concurrent resolution. Have you seen that one yet?
That's coming. Yeah, it's we just read that one in, and there's a series of, on that note, you know, constitutional amendments that are coming.
Right.
We sent the House judicial elections, right? The selection of Supreme Court, you know,
which is just going to go to direct elect, right? Puts power in the people.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And the more I looked at that, I used to be a heavy supporter of the federal model, and I still am. The federal model will be much better than what we have. You know, we're the only state in the nation that gives this superpower to lawyers, right, to make that decision. Doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat.
Right.
The bar has the majority, and they'll send what they get. And the more I looked at it, you think about it, we're used to it down in Sedgwick County, right? We elect our district judges. We've not had this, and it shows that we have high merit with even our elected judges, and really just having the people have a voice. So right now they have no voice at all. I mean, there's no Senate confirmation. There is nothing.
Right.
Unless you're an attorney that has a vote to put the superpower lawyer on the NOMCOM, you have no voice at all in that. And the people should have a voice who sits on top of every single branch of government, right? We elect our governor, we elect our legislature, but we don't have that in the judicial branch. We have the most, you know, kind of the secret club of lawyers that set that person in place, and we've got to change that.
Yeah, you have a very, it's a very elitist system right now. It's not representative at all. Two other things I want to get to before I have to let you go. The Senate actually has created a DOGE committee, for lack of a better term. Our friend
we call it COGE.
COGE, right?
On
government. Yep. Our friend Senator Renee Erickson is chairing that. I talked to her the other day. She's having a whole lot of fun finding stuff to cut. By the way, kudos, because that's you. That's takes Senate President. Yep. You created that. Are you guys having some fun there? Are you finding some? I guarantee you can find some things to cut.
Oh, there's so, yeah. I joke with my friends. We're not going to find $50 million for condoms in Gaza, but hey, we've got a lot of room to move, right? I mean, there's actually so much there. We opened up a portal to the public. We've had like literally thousands of submissions. And I'll admit some of them are, you know, something profane about Trump or abolish all government. But there's a lot of people really giving us good ideas, right, about what we can look at. I mean, I'm really more excited for COGE next session, right? We're learning right now.
Right.
We have some low-hanging fruit we're going to go after, you know, kind of funded, unfunded but unfilled FTEs and things like that we can get some low-hanging fruit on. But the big changes are going to be coming after our interim, where we're evaluating all this interaction. And by the way, even if for your audience, if you're out there and you're interacting with the bureaucracy of Kansas government, I want to know about it. I don't care if it's even small to you, like licensing or permitting or, you know, something like that. We want to know, and we want to make that more efficient. We've even talked about, we joked internally, we probably should have said government effectiveness instead of government efficiency in the committee name, because should we efficiently be doing something we don't even need to do at all?
maybe we need to look
at that, right? I mean, but yeah, that's one of my highlights. I'm excited to see what we can come out of there.
I think you would agree the number one issue, I mean, the notices are coming out this week. The number one issue, the last election recently, actually for a number of elections, has been taxes, property taxes in particular. I know it's actually an area you and Dan have worked so well together over the last few years, and yet this is the one area where it seems like there's some daylight between the House vision and your vision.
I think
where do you see you guys correct. Coming together?
So we definitely will get to an amendment. I mean, because property is a big issue. I mean, I have a single mother. My daughter's a single mother, has her own home. She just, I mean, literally called me this last week and said, Dad, my house payment just went up another, you know, $150.
Yep.
And when we went back and look at it, it was property tax. Right. And it's like, and she's not had this big raise at work. So, I think where our disconnect is right now, and we'll work through it, is the Senate's a little more concerned about kind of taxing unrealized gains. You know, people that have been in their homes a long time but have fixed incomes and haven't been able to sustain. That would create a constitutional amendment on the valuation side. We're allowing people to stay in their homes longer. The House is more interested in kind of a rolling average, taking the peaks out of it. The good news is we will have something that benefits the Kansas people long term. The difficulty, as you know, John, at the state level with property taxes, all of it's local.
Right.
We passed a bill that just removed the state altogether. Really, only thing the state had in there was the 1.5 mills for like state buildings, right? Educational
right. Yeah.
and institutions. So we took that off just on principle. I can't go out to my constituents and say, hey, I delivered $60 million in tax relief, which is, that is the amount and what was delivered. But, you know, if you have a USD, a city, a county, a library board, a community college, eat that up, my constituents aren't going to see relief.
So it's a pittance.
We're really long term. We have to get into the how it's done into a constitutional amendment.
Yeah, you're right, because it's a pittance. The state portion, when you factor in primarily the schools and then local and county governments, you're. Well, Ty, I appreciate you, as always, coming on. You know the last question. You know what it's going to be. You're not going to answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. When we were in Goodland, there were two or three people who were running for governor. Are you going to be one of those people? And you're not going to answer the question, but I'm going to ask it.
So here's what I'll tell you, John. I am humbled and honored to be on people's minds when they think about that. I do have 6 weeks of session left. However, I will tell you, and this is the first time I've told anybody anything like this, I don't know of anybody and haven't heard anybody that is in or getting in that I think can bring Trump-style changes like I could if I did it. So we'll evaluate that as soon as we're out of session.
That's a great answer. And, Phil, by the way, that's what you call the campaign two-step right there. So, Ty, I appreciate you. I love you as always. You're a dear friend. If folks want to get and connect with you, if they want to watch your announcements as they may or may not come out, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Well, you can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. You can just go straight to the website, or you can email ty.masterson@senate.ks.gov. We'd love to hear from you.
Brother, I appreciate you. Say hello to your better nine-tenths.
Thank you, sir.
All
have
right,
a great
my
weekend.
Friend. Bye. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, Brittany Jones from Kansas Family Voice will join us to bring us an update on their recent legislative victories and tell us about a couple of upcoming events. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. AFP has an exciting rally with Congressman Ron Estes coming up as part of the Protect Prosperity Initiative. It's coming up next Saturday, the 8th. If you want to make your voice heard, you can visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. Great way to get involved. AFP Kansas are great folks. And while you're online, don't forget to like and follow the John Whitmer Show on Facebook and True Social and on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Don't forget, next Sunday we'll be in Topeka, thanks to my friends at Eck Insurance. With us now is a dear friend. I've known her for a long time, all the way back from when I was in the legislature, and she used to harass me when to make sure I was voting the right way, which, by the way, I always did, is Brittany Jones from Kansas Family Voice. Brittany, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on this show.
Thanks so much for having me. And you know that I harass and love.
Yes, yes, you do. And fortunately, I've never been on the bad side of
No, you haven't.
No, I'm not a Schreiber. I was always on the right side of those votes.
Yes.
You've had a really good session so far. I've been going through, you had the Give a Name Act, which just passed recently. That teaches, by the way, for folks who don't know, basically it helps affirm a teacher's First Amendment rights, requiring schools to use a student's birth certificate name, gets rid of the pronoun nonsense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it puts the power back in the hands of the parents, and it ensures that teachers' First Amendment rights are protected. It's super simple when people actually look at it and read it for what it is and don't try to make it something that it's not. And it's common sense to most Kansans. And so it's kind of shocking to me when We've gotten some weird opposition from some weird places. You know, whenever we talk about schools in Kansas, it, you know, it brings up some interesting feelings for people. But this is a really common sense bill that most Kansans agree with. So that just, it passed the Senate last week, and we're getting it moving in the House this week, which should be really exciting.
Well, and then flipping from the House to the Senate, you just passed out of the House 85-34, the Helping Moms and Supporting Babies bill. That was a KFL, and you guys worked with KFL on that one, didn't you?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've had a great partnership with KFL over the last couple of years of really advancing this culture of life and these bills that, you know, help moms, that support babies. And this bill is, it ensures that pregnant moms can receive child support during their pregnancy to help cover pregnancy related expenses.
Novel concept here. I mean, this is all common.
Idea.
Both of these are very common sense. And I guarantee you the Democrats were pulling their hair out on both of them.
Well, and that's what the opposition, they're like, we just can't figure out what they're doing here. They've got to be doing something bad. And you're like, we're not. We're just trying to help moms.
You have a couple of events coming up here next month. You've got one on the 13th, the Hero film. This is on Sunday, April 13th at 3, which is good because then you can still tune into the show. But that's at the Orpheum Theater, correct?
Purpose.
You did that on purpose. I don't buy that, but I'll take it.
I didn't plan that timing, but I think they knew. No, we're really excited about that event. To me, really highlighting the educational freedom and school choice movement throughout Kansas. And I think it's going to be just a beautiful time to really celebrate what the Lord has done and what we can do in the future together.
And then you've got a legislative summit coming up on April 26th. By the way, I'll have information on both of these events on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. But you've got a legislative summit that's on April 26th at the Barn in Great Plain, correct?
That's correct. I think that event starts at 6:30. There's more details that'll be coming out soon, but the person on just before me, Senator Ty Masterson, will be one of our speakers.
Oh.
And we've invited the federal delegation as well as a lot of local leaders in Wichita to talk to people about what they're doing, how they're advancing the cause of family, faith, and freedom in their individual arenas. But we think that it's going to be a great night to really inspire people to get involved and to learn what's going on in their own community. So be on the lookout for more information about that.
Well, you guys always have great events. I know I've got the event on the 26th on my calendar. I will try and make the film. I generally do my show prep in the afternoons on Sundays. But,
okay.
You know, we'll see. Maybe I'll tweak my schedule, see if I can make the movie as well. But if folks are interested, if they want to volunteer, if they want to help, if they want to get engaged with some of your policy work or some of the education that you guys are doing, they can find you at KansasFamilyVoice.com, correct?
That's correct. Or follow us on Instagram or Facebook, or Twitter even. Reach out to us, get connected. We would love to get you involved. We've got, you know, we've already passed the Help.Harm Act and it's already became law last week, but we've got a lot more things on the policy front, but also a lot of ways we're engaging in the community, especially in Wichita, to really activate the church, activate families, and try to help families across the state.
Well, and I, again, kudos. I gave Dan a big hug at the convention, and kudos to you as well on finally overriding our middle of the road governor, who seemed to think that minors should be able to chop off body parts.
Wild.
Yeah. You know, what can you say? She's middle of the road, right? Yeah. Not. Brittany, thank you again. Always a pleasure. We'll keep us in the loop, all right?
Thanks, John.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. We'll take a quick break, and then after the top of the hour break, I'll play my exclusive interview with Senator Roger Marshall. We talked a little earlier this afternoon about his town hall in Oakley and lots of latest news out of Washington, D.C. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. You can always listen to us by telling your smart speaker to play KNSS Radio, and make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and True Social page, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. And, of course, give us a call. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. We'd love to hear from you. Don't forget, next Sunday we'll be broadcasting live from Topeka. Thanks to our friends at Eck Insurance. Coming up this Friday, I will be joined by newly elected Kansas Republican Party Vice Chair Andy Hoosier. We'll be hosting a roundtable discussion at the weekly Pachyderm Club luncheon. Andy and I always have fun when we host those sessions. We'll hope you'll join us. And don't forget, tickets are selling fast to the 2025 Kansans for Life banquet at Park City Arena with Rachel Campos Duffy from Fox News. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, you can get those at KFL.org. Earlier today, I had the opportunity to have a conversation with Dr. Roger Marshall. He was getting ready to fly back to Washington, D.C., but we sat down, had a pretty good conversation. We will go ahead and play that for you now.
Marshall, thank you again for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, as always.
Yeah, John, great to be with you. A beautiful sunny day in Kansas. I got to go fishing with my dad. Wichita State had a baseball game today, so spring is almost here.
Well, and it was a pleasure to see you in Goodland yesterday. Big crowd out in, it's just mountain time, but it was a great crowd out in Goodland. Nice to see you.
Yeah, it was. We did a big Northwest Kansas swing. My staff said we passed through five different time zones in 2 days, trying to hit six or seven counties up there. But it was good to see everybody. Had a decent amount of moisture this last year and this winter, so the wheat crop looks like it's doing pretty good.
Doc, one of the things that came up yesterday quite a bit at the state convention was the president and DOGE. You know, there are some in the media that are upset with the president and what Elon Musk is doing, but the president still enjoys widespread approval, and frankly, yeah, he's doing exactly what the 77 million Americans who voted for him want him to do, right?
Yeah, I think that is it. And it is interesting to me. I think President Trump's approval rating is around 53%. But if you dial down on the different issues that he's attacking, it's more like 70% approval. So whether it's securing the border, setting American energy free, a quick end to the war in Ukraine, or saving money by DOGE, about 65-75% of people support each one of those. And it's been, I tell you what, it's just been shocking all up in D.C. We're not going to be talking about 100 days of President Trump. We were talking about the first 100 hours. We're in there about, 5 weeks? We're setting record rates of getting his nominees approved. So as he sets these executive orders, we need those secretaries, the heads of the agencies in there to implement his executive orders. And I think Americans are feeling the success already, and I'm excited to be part of it.
But, and Senator, Americans elected the president knowing full well and expecting him to do exactly what he was going to do, in particular looking for waste, fraud, and abuse at the federal level, even in areas like, for example, the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I know you and Senator Moran are keenly focused on veterans. Your son is currently serving in the military, as I think. And, even DOGE, if it were to find areas to cut at the VA, for example, wouldn't that money then turn around and be spent on health care and benefits for veterans? It's not like they're going to turn around and go on a cruise or something. That money would just be spent more efficiently, right?
Well, certainly taking care of veterans is a huge priority for President Trump. You mentioned Senator Moran, my senior senator, who's in charge of the VA committee as well. But you're absolutely right. And first of all, this is so important to me. I served, my son is serving, my dad served, my brother served, and multiple generations. So this is a very important issue to me. And I think it's interesting to take a look at the last 8 or 10 or 12 years that prior to President Trump, the VA satisfaction rate had dipped down in the 50s. Under President Trump 1.0, that satisfaction rate went up in the high 80s. And within a year or two, it drops back down in the low 50s under Joe Biden again. We have waiting lists now of over 29 days for our veterans to get in to see a doctor, and that's unacceptable. I think one of the big challenges we have is in Washington, D.C. only 6% of the federal employees are actually in the office working, and that's true for the Veterans Affairs as well. So when we try to onboard a million people from this what's called the PACT Act, which is new legislation, Senator Moran, again, I'll give him all the credit, the PACT Act, $200 or $300 billion of funding for our soldiers that were exposed to the burned pits in the Middle East, onboarding them into the VA system. And that they just done a they've not done a very good job onboarding those people. The VA system's overwhelmed right now. So we need everybody rowing the boat in the right direction right now. If you're working from home, if you don't want to work, then get out. And let's hire the right people to make sure our veterans get the care that they were promised and the care that they deserve.
Yeah, another area that the president, again, promises made, promises delivered, is the number of illegals crossing the southern border. Just in President Trump's first month in office, that number has plunged to a level not seen in at least 25 years last month. I mean, what a difference an administration makes.
Yeah, you know, it's all about the will. It's the want to. People used to ask me, why can't Joe Biden figure out how to stop all these illegal aliens coming across the border? Many times there were 10,000 in a day crossing the border illegally. And I said, because he doesn't want to. He wanted those
right.
people to come across the border. And just the will of the president and reinstituting his policies and mostly telling people that if you come here illegally, we're going to put you on a boat back the other direction has scared them all off. And I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it's got to be down to down 75% or so, I would guess. It's very manageable. What's really manageable is the number of gotaways going that we're actually keeping from getting away, if you will. You know, under Joe Biden, 2 million people gotaways. We saw them crossing the border, never did any type of assessment of them, never got them ID'd or whatever. So that number slowing down. And I know they're working night and day deporting the criminal aliens as well. And I'm telling you what, I think it's more like 75-80% of Americans support this policy.
Yeah, I think you're right. We're talking with United States Senator Roger Marshall. And Doc, I know you've got to run to get a plane here in a few, so I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. I mentioned it was nice to see you yesterday in Goodland. You were very busy yesterday. I know in addition to the stop in Goodland, some of my audience probably has seen the coverage of your town hall yesterday. The meeting was held at the Logan County Hospital in Oakley. Videos show that the event was, shall we say, contentious. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, John, you know, to me, this is just another day in my life. I think the media is making a much bigger deal about it than I thought about it. I didn't think twice about it. I've probably done 20 or 30 town halls during Trump 1.0, just as contentious. I think the sad thing about this situation is that here I was in rural America, Oakley, Kansas. A population in the whole county there is not 3,000 people, and everyone there is connected to agriculture. So the issues that they want to talk about are rural America and agriculture, and the farmers there, the ranchers, some really hard times economically, record drop in net farm income under Joe Biden as well. That's what they wanted to talk about, but unfortunately they were shouted down just by some embarrassing group of people. So it was sad to see that, but I'll try to come back another day and sit down with my farmers and ranchers and have a cup of coffee with them.
I'm actually glad you mentioned that because, you know, I watched the video of it, and as you know, I served in the legislature, and it's sad because, like, for example, I didn't hear anybody get to talk about rural water, and that's a major issue for the folks out in that part of the state, and instead they're asking questions about, you know, Trump and Doge, and that may be important, but if you can't feed your cattle and you can't water your land, that really is what probably matters to those folks. So I frankly would have left a lot earlier than you did. So, Doc, let me ask you about another meeting that occurred over the weekend, and that was in the Oval Office, a meeting between President Trump and Vice President Vance and President Zelensky. And I mean, I'm not on the national stage, but it seems to me if you come to see the head of state with your hat in hand, you wear a suit, you say thank you, and maybe you show some humility. But that's just me.
Yeah, I want to kind of frame this discussion because people kind of jump off in some silos. But again, I think what I'm seeing, 70-80% of Americans want this war to end quickly, sooner than later. They want to get towards a peace agreement. My heart goes out to the people of Ukraine. They've been fighting with Russia now probably 1,500 years. It's a never-ending war in so many ways, and they fought so bravely. I want to point out that we have at least a million casualties between the two of them. Maybe a million people have died, and none of us want that either as well. And finally, I want to just make it real clear that Vladimir Putin is a war criminal. He's a murderer. He's a thug. He should be taken to the court in Hague and have a trial. But all that being said, I think if we just continue to throw money at this, if we keep giving Ukraine more and more money and more weapons, this war is just prolonged, and it truly never ends. And that's to Putin's advantage. He can outlast anybody when he's on his home court there. So I think that I would just encourage Mr. Zelensky to go home and think about this and maybe come back to President Trump and say maybe that mineral idea is a good idea. I think it's a brilliant idea by President Trump to create this economic corridor there, kind of like ending the way President Eisenhower was able to end the Korean conflict as well, by kind of setting up this detente there area. And once we have American investments in there, then we're going to have more of an obligation to protect it. So now I'm starting to worry, does Zelensky have some type of a previous arrangement made with those mineral rights, or why is he so hesitant to do this?
Yeah, and it does make sense. If we had a fiscal, financial investment there, then we would, by default, want to defend our interests without necessarily having to just commit ourselves to troops indefinitely, which is, I don't think any American wants to do that. Doc, I know I've got to let you run at some point. You know, the House passed the big, beautiful bill, budget reconciliation process. How do you think that's going to fare now that it's heading over to the Senate?
Yeah, well, I want to applaud them. When you have a 2 or 3 seat majority, it is next to impossible to get something done over there. So compliments to my good friend, Speaker Mike Johnson, and another good friend, the chairman of the Budget Committee, Jody Arrington. We all came into Congress together and kind of grown up together there over these last 8 years. So congratulations to them. We also passed a budget reconciliation bill. They're a little bit different. I think they'll go to conference. And we'll try to iron out and get the best of all worlds here. We need to secure the border. We need to set American energy free. Those types of things need to happen. I think that we can go after more cuts in government spending than either one of them have right now. And we may have to come back and take a second bite of the apple and do another reconciliation bill. But I'm hopeful we'll get this one across the finish line, maybe some more money for our military like we have in ours as well. So we'll keep trudging forward here and see if we can help fulfill some of President Trump's goals. Again, funding an Air Force to help him secure the border. We're going to run out of money very soon if we don't get President Trump some more money to secure the border as well as for our military. So hopefully we'll find a way to get this across the finish line.
We were both out in western Kansas yesterday. Those folks are anxious about the farm bill. Where do we stand on that?
Yeah, I think with Republican control of the Senate now, we will put farm back in the farm bill. My friends across the aisle refuse to adequately fund crop insurance. Crop insurance is the backbone of every farm bill. Remind your listeners that only 5% of a farm bill goes to the farmers. About 80-85% of our food programs, we've tripled funding for our nutrition program since the last farm bill. We went from $60 to $180 billion for nutrition programs, and I'm very happy we live in such a wealthy country that we can give so much free food. And I want to make sure everyone has food. No one goes to bed hungry. But when it comes to a farm bill, we need to protect crop insurance. We need to make sure the conservation programs are flexible enough that farmers in western Kansas can use it as well and protect our reference prices. And that's kind of inside baseball. But I think we'll get it across the finish line. And hopefully we can, with new leadership there in the Senate on our side and their side, we'll get it across the finish line sometime this year.
Doc, if I know I've got to let you run. If folks want to connect with you, obviously they can find you on X at Roger Marshall MD. If they want to, what's the best way to reach out to you?
You know, really, people should go to our website, marshall.senate.gov. And I especially wanted to mention this to your veterans. A huge priority for us is our veterans. If you're a veteran and you're having problems getting in to see a doctor, if you're having problems getting medicines, if you're having problems getting your benefits, go on to marshall.senate.gov and email us. Tyler Mason has worked for me since day one. He came through us through the Warrior Program and does just an incredible job of helping our veterans go through the paperwork hassle as well. So marshall.senate.gov, you can email us there.
Senator, I appreciate you as always.
John, great to be with you as well, and just God bless this great country. I'm so proud to be part of it.
Thank you, my friend. Stay in touch and travel safely.
Thank you.
Well, you can tell he was at an airport because you could hear the flight announcement in the background. We'll take a break. Speaking of air, then Air Force Colonel Josh McConkie will join us to talk about Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's decision to restore Fort Bragg's name. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back. Welcome back. Sorry, I was having a hard time hearing my microphone. Sorry, it's live radio, folks. What can I say? Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget our friends at Kansans for Life. They've got their annual banquet here in Wichita coming up on the 25th. If you want to get information for it, it's got Rachel Campos Duffy, the wife of our new transportation secretary, and she and her daughter, Evita Duffy, will be out at Park City Arena. Tickets are available at KFL.org. You can also find information on that on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. And of course, if you're online, don't forget to visit and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and find me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, while flying aboard a C-17 from Joint Base Andrews to Stuttgart on earlier last month, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth signed a memorandum renaming Fort Liberty in North Carolina back to Fort Bragg. The new name pays tribute to PFC Ronald L. Bragg, a World War II hero who earned the Silver Star and a Purple Heart for his exceptional courage during the Battle of the Bulge. With us now to give us his take on the name restoration is Air Force Colonel Josh McConkie. He is author of Be the Weight Behind the Spear. Colonel McConkie's military service includes providing critical medical support in both wartime and peacetime operations, with over 340 hours as a flight surgeon and 90 combat hours in rotor wing medical evacuation and air assault missions in the Middle East. He's an Air Medal and Army Commendation Medal recipient for exemplary service during Operation Iraqi Freedom. Colonel, first off, thank you for your service and thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me on the show.
So can you explain the original reason for the name change? Because, you know, some of us don't. Was this part of the Biden administration's, you know, woke tour when they started pulling off names? Because it doesn't sound to me like PFC Bragg's name needed to be changed. It wasn't like one of the, you know, removing the name of a Confederate soldier or something.
Yeah. So, you know, Fort Bragg is what brought me and my family to North Carolina. And that name Bragg is synonymous with American military power. So it's the birthplace of our special operations, the JFK Special Warfare School, you know, airborne operations. If you look at like popular culture, like all the different movies.
Oh, yeah.
Rambo. I mean, they specifically talk about Fort Bragg. So the name initially was associated with Braxton Bragg. So it was a Civil War general. You know, it was over 150 years ago. To the men and women that have served at Fort Bragg, it has nothing to do with a Confederate general. It has everything to do with the men and women that have served there. You know, and now that they've named it after Roland Bragg, you know, a World War II absolute hero, part of America's greatest generation. I think it's always been Fort Bragg. Nobody in North Carolina called it Fort Liberty. It's finally now back to Fort Bragg.
Well, and you know, when Biden was doing this, it was so obvious what it was. It was just typical of the whole woke nonsense. And it was so emblematic of, you know, why, like right now there, some of these universities are going around changing, you know, woman to birthing person and that kind of stuff, an inseminated carrier. I mean, it's just nonsense. We all know what it is. Why are we being so? It just seemed like it was just asinine. Now, I guess the question is, why are they restoring? Is it just because we're going back to tradition and we're not going to play that nonsense anymore, basically?
You know, it's certainly a part of that. And then just recognizing that no one recognized it as Fort Liberty. Like I live here in North Carolina. I live outside of Raleigh. You know, spent a lot of time in Fayetteville. The people of Fayetteville never changed Bragg Boulevard. So the big boulevard that runs right through the base and into Fayetteville, they kept it Fort Bragg. Nobody called it Fort Liberty. It's just recognizing what it's always been and just reversing the woke policies, the different, you know, agendas that they've had that really deteriorated our military capability. You know, Pete Hegseth is putting us back in the business of delivering lethal force when called upon. You know, me running a medical squadron, I take a lot of pride in being that force multiplier for our men and women that are taking bullets for this country, knowing that they have the best, you know, medical facilities and equipment, you know, on the planet that helps them do their job.
We're talking with Air Force Colonel Josh McConkie. And Colonel, I will give you some grace if the next couple of questions you have to dance around, because a dear friend of mine, our House Speaker here in Kansas, is active military. He's a guardsman, but still. So I know sometimes, because you're military, you have to be careful how you answer questions. But it clearly seems that the president has put a new emphasis on prioritizing military excellence and readiness versus the prior administration, which was just trying to be so inclusive. And I'm curious if that's what you're seeing. Some of these things, like getting rid of the trans and getting rid of, don't get me wrong, we want to try and be inclusive as a culture, but the military is not the place for social experimentation. The military is, for lack of a better way of looking at it, breaking skulls, taking land, win and get out. I mean, that's really what the purpose is. We shouldn't be doing social experimentation in our military.
You know, General Mattis said it best in his book, Call Sign Chaos, where he just mentioned the American military is not a place for your cultural experimentation.
Yeah, yeah.
Our job is to deliver lethality. It is a terrible and horrific mission. I have personally carried body bags of America's heroes. I did one air assault in Iraq. It was the scariest thing I've ever done. But when we are called upon to deliver that lethality, that is the only thing that we need to be concerned about. You know, the left-wing agendas. And I think people need to recognize that our military is not a reflection of our population at large. You'll hear people say that. It's not. Less than 1% of people in this country have served in the military for various reasons, whether there's medical conditions or mental health conditions. You know, they're not able to serve. It is not a reflection of the population at whole. It is the reflection of our best and the highest standards. And the mission that we are set out to do is to deliver that lethality when called upon, deters our enemies and keeps America safe. It contributes to our national security. That's it. If what you're asking us to do doesn't help us do that job, then you're wasting our time.
Yeah, and nor should the military be necessarily a reflection. It needs to be, well, the best and brightest, period. That should be it's, again, getting back to merit, getting back to who is the most qualified, who can do the job, and who cares about the other stuff. And I'm glad to see that we're prioritizing excellence and readiness and getting rid of the other stuff that just didn't seem to matter. I mentioned it in the intro. You're the author of Be the Weight Behind the Spear. The book is available on Amazon. Can you give us a moment? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, this is my call to action for Americans. As an emergency physician and as a military commander, I see the mental health crisis that is crippling our country for some various policy failures over the past several years. So you see anxiety and depression and suicide. And as a military commander, the lack of resiliency in our youngest group of airmen, I was so concerned I wrote this book. If you don't recognize there's a problem, you can't fix it. That is clearly the problem. This book is the prescription to fix that problem. Our best resource in this country is our people. It's teachers, coaches, volunteers, and mentors. That is what sets America apart from the rest of the world. That is what China and Russia envy. And so we need to harness that resource, get people to engage their communities and pick this generation up before it's too late. This book is my prescription on how we do that.
Colonel, thank you again for joining us. Again, the book is called Be the Weight Behind the Spear. It's available on Amazon. Thank you again for your service, and thank you for joining us, my friend.
Yes, sir. God bless.
You too. We'll take a quick break, pay a few bills, and then author and filmmaker Dr. John G. West will tell us why he says America's Christian leaders are failing and what, if anything, we can do about it. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by downloading the Odyssey app or telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS Radio. And, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. In his new book, Stockholm Syndrome, Christianity, Dr. John West poses the question, what if American culture isn't collapsing because of crusading secularists? What if it's failing because many leading Christians identify more with secular elites than with their fellow believers? The author, Dr. John West, is vice president and a senior fellow at the Seattle-based Discovery Institute, where he also serves as a managing director of the Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Dr. West, thank you for joining us tonight. It's a pleasure having you on the show, sir.
John, thanks for having me.
So, Stockholm Syndrome Christianity. Dr. West, I guess my first question is, and it's probably one that a lot of people are asking themselves, particularly people of faith, is do we have a crisis of faith in America right now?
Well, I think there are some good signs that many people may be returning, but I do think we have a crisis of authority, say, for leading Christians, whether it be in the media or in academia or politics or in the entertainment industry. A lot of them act a lot more like the world than they do the teachings they say they believe, and that's a problem. If one happens to be a Christian or even just a person of faith and think that Christianity is a social good and has helped call us towards justice and helped call us towards righteousness and human flourishing, that if our pastors and professors and actors and, you know, you name, politicians who espouse Christianity aren't living, you know, consistently with their faith and not actually basing their policies on something consistent with their faith, then that all of us will are damaged by that.
Well, so basically they're walking, but they're not, well, they're talking rather, but they're not walking the talk. In the book, you warn that many are identifying more with secular culture than biblical truth. And you bring out this concept of a secular, for lack of a better term, a theological drift. And I like to think of it as a drift to the left, basically, taking over religious institutions. What do you mean by, and is that, I guess for me, I see that as sort of like the, so my wife and I used to attend a particular denomination here that has been taken over in part by a lot of the, you know, lesbian, gay pastors. They preach a lot, and don't get me wrong, you want to be gay, you want to be lesbian, that's fine, that's your choice, but I don't care for it in the pulpit. And you know, now we don't anymore because we didn't like the direction that particular church was going. And I see that a lot with some of these faiths that are, you know, it just seems like they're losing their way with some more traditional Christian beliefs. Is that kind of what you mean with this, the drift taking over?
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, it's basically you have Christians who are looking more and more like the world. And I'll give you a very specific example that's actually in the news today. Francis Collins was the most powerful scientist in America for about a decade. He was head of the National Institutes for Health, and he also was known as a dedicated evangelical Christian. But if you actually look at his policies while he was in power, and the reason it's in today is he's just formally retired from even being a scientist at the NIH on Friday, and so that's why there's some news stories about that today. But if you actually look at what Francis Collins did when he was this devout evangelical Christian, when he was in power, well, here are some of the things he did. He oversaw the creation of a nationwide tissue bank where we harvested baby parts from late-term aborted babies up to 42 weeks in gestation. 42 weeks, that's a term.
Right.
To create, to use in medical research. Some medical research that he funded included taking scalps off of the little babies and grafting them onto mice. This was a committed Christian who oversaw this. He also oversaw even more millions of dollars of tax dollars going to pay for doctors and children's hospitals that promoted puberty blockers and gender deconstructive surgery on kids. You know, whatever you think of transgenderism, I think most people do agree that kids should not be getting puberty blockers or having their breasts cut off. Yet Francis Collins funded researchers who did those things. And so those are just two. And really, the sad part is by the end of his career at the NIH, he was being praised by left-wing outlets like Slate that said, you know, we knew he was a Christian, we were worried about that, but we shouldn't have been, because basically they said, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but this is basically what they said, he did everything we wanted. And so if he helped mollify some of the pro-lifers or some of the Christians and deflect what they, you know, their concerns, then this was great. What a sad epitaph. If I were Francis Collins, I would be heartbroken to be praised by people like that for basically being indistinguishable from the world.
Yeah, and this is that you gave a great example, and this is in part why we no longer attend the United Methodist Church, is because it has in many ways become indistinguishable. And don't get me wrong, again, we want to be tolerant, but at some point you still have to have basic fundamental principles, like a respect for life, like the sanctity of marriage, the recognition that there are only two genders. And I love the idea that you're saying here, that there is a theological drift towards secularism. And when you continue to do that, you lose your base principles. Your core philosophy starts to disappear.
And it really impacts more things than people may think. For example, we do have long-term intergenerational poverty issues in our nation, and also homelessness. If you're a Christian, you actually know that a lot of this brokenness flows out not just of economics, it flows out of deep brokenness. Like when it comes to the homeless, a lot of them are either mentally ill or substance abusers.
Right.
And so if you're going to help them, you can't just throw money at them. You can't just give them material resources. You have to deal with the spiritual, emotional, social component. And Christians have understood that for ages. Yet there are many, and I talk about some of this in my book, so-called Christian charitable organizations that actually don't act like that. All they do is give, you know, food or shelter, and they don't, which that's important, but they don't actually try to reach the deepest needs of people. And yet their faith would tell them that, you know, you're not going to be successful if you don't actually try to have a spiritual component of what you're trying to reach people who are really broken. And so too many Christians are bought off by this, the secular mindset around them. And but you know what you shared about you and your wife, I'm so glad. A lot of my book, it's exposing, but it's also what can we do about it. And the sad fact is, too few people are like you and your wife. There are many people who say, when they go to a church and say it goes off the deep end, they simply stay there. They continue to write the checks, no matter what, for a feeling of nostalgia, sentiment, you know, relationships. And so they're enabling this.
Yep. That's why we left. That's you. But that's when you leave, because I mean, you can try and change for a while, but when they won't fundamentally change, then you have to. It's no different than leaving a business, you know, or ceasing to do business with a company if they no longer ascribe to your tenants, or if you feel that they are doing something, you're not going to buy from that woke company or whatever. It's the same thing with a church. If that particular church is engaging in pro-abortion or something like that, or won't take a stand on life, well, then I'm not going to do business with you, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I think if more faithful Christians understood that they're enabling, I mean, I have a principle I talk about in the book called do no harm. Even if you're not doing good things, even if you don't think that you have time to do that, make sure that where you give your time, talent, and treasure, where you volunteer, that you're not enabling other people to do bad. At very least, you know, pay attention.
Well, Dr. West, I appreciate you joining us. If folks want to connect with you, if they want to get a copy of the book, again, it's called Stockholm Syndrome Christianity. If they want to get a copy of the book, where can they get one?
Yeah, they can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, but if they want more information, just go to StockholmSyndromeChristianity.com, and there's a lot more information about the book there.
Dr. West, I appreciate you. God bless. Thank you for taking time with us this evening.
Thank you for having me. Have a good night.
We'll take a quick break, and then Deb Lucia from Americans for Prosperity Kansas will tell us about their upcoming rally they've got coming up here next week. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. I want to remind you, our friends at Americans for Prosperity are hosting a really cool rally. It's with Congressman Ron Estes. It's all part of the Protect Prosperity Initiative. It's coming up next Saturday. I'll be there. My good buddy Andy Hoosier will be there. If you want to make your voice heard, you want to be part of this really cool event to help make sure that we get taxes lowered at the federal level. If you want information on the event, you can find it on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page or visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. And, of course, while you're online, you can, you know, go to the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and find me on X at True Social. Don't forget, next Sunday we'll be broadcasting live from Topeka thanks to our friends at Eck Insurance. And let's see, next Friday, we've got the Pachyderm Club with myself and Andy Hoosier, so don't forget that. Joining us now is Deb Lucia from Americans for Prosperity Kansas. Deb, thank you for joining us. First off, I have to congratulate you on the victory last week. Wichitans will be getting a property tax cut soon, thanks to the defeat of the bond vote. So kudos to you guys. I know you were out there door knocking and working hard on that.
That's right. Yes, we were. You know, taxes are high.
Yeah.
And anything that we can do, and that's one of Americans for Prosperity's biggest areas, is reducing tax burden for citizens. We're taxed every time we turn around. We're taxed on everything.
Yep.
You know, I think in the state of Kansas, there's, I don't know, 36 different categories of taxes, or it's three pages long of taxes. There's over 100 taxes at the federal government level. Everything we buy has multiple taxes on it. And so we need a break. And Americans for Prosperity really believes in promoting lower taxes. And the reason taxes are so high is because we overspend. But what we have to do is, on Saturday, we have a rally coming up, and it's at our new AFP offices, which are in Union Station. You know, please come out for the event. Congressman Estes will be there. It's at 1 o'clock. And what people have to realize is that the taxes right now that you're paying at the federal government have been reduced, and they were reduced significantly in 2017 after President Trump first took office. Those tax cuts are due to expire this year. And so if we don't maintain those taxes, everybody's going to get a tax increase. For the average Kansan, it's about $2,200. That's a lot of money, especially with the inflation we've been having those last, you know, 4 years after the Biden administration.
Right.
And so the rally is for people to get out and make their voice heard to say, please keep our taxes low, keep the Trump tax cuts, and really protect prosperity. Because when Trump lowered taxes, we saw tremendous prosperity in the nation. in addition to Congressman Essex, we have a couple of business owners that were here and that were affected by the 2017 tax cuts, and they're going to talk about their experiences. And it's really a rally to support President Trump and these to keep these taxes low for all Americans.
Well,
and
that's
for us in Kansas.
I was going to say, this is the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and it wasn't just individual taxpayers. By the way, I saw the protests that, you know, they've had these protests going on downtown and on Saturdays, and they're a bunch of nonsense, and they've got the protest signs, you know, fire Trump and calling him a tyrant and whatnot. And part of their thing is that the we're taxing the rich, and that all these things were tax cuts only for the rich. And that couldn't be further from the truth with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And one of the things that it also did was it benefited businesses, all businesses, from your mom and pop, small business all the way up. And what people don't understand is if these tax cuts go away, immediately that's going to affect those small businesses. And that could immediately mean layoffs. It will mean price cut, you know, prices going up, which all that flows downhill, comes right back down to your pocket, right?
Correct. And it is one of, I believe 60% of Americans believe that the wealthy don't pay their fair share because they've been told that.
Right. It's nonsense, but that's what they believe.
By the Democratic Party and a left-leaning media and activist groups keep saying it over and over. All you have to do is go to the IRS and look at the Treasury records that are there, public knowledge, and the wealthy pay the majority of taxes in this country. It is not tax cuts for the wealthy. The wealthy got, everybody did get a tax break, but the wealthy got the smallest percentage of it. The biggest tax break under the Trump tax cuts went to, on the individual taxes, it went to the middle class. But businesses also got tremendous tax cuts. And what most business owners do, and you'll hear that from the business owners that are going to speak, is they turned around and gave that back to their employees. You know, this narrative that business owners are evil and that they are, you know, taking all this money for themselves and leaving everybody else behind is not true. And you'll hear that at this rally. Business owners, what they do is they reinvest their money, they hire more people, and it goes back into the economy. And then when more people are working, when businesses can hire more people, that leads to more tax revenue, which just helps all of us and it helps the economy.
Right.
So, you know, we're at Americans for Prosperity, we're really happy, or we're very glad with the work that we do. We believe is really important to Kansans, and we just need to get that message out there. So the rally is going to be fun. It's going to be 1 o'clock at Union Station. You've got to go onto the second floor. So you have to drive, go behind Union Station down Mead Street. There's a ramp that takes you up to the second level parking area, which is outside. And then that's where the drive all the way down to the front by the black train. And that's where the rally is going to be at.
Well, so we'll be there. We'll park the KNSS little Jeep there so people can see it, make it easier for them to find. Again, it's next Saturday, the 8th at 1 o'clock at Union Station. Upstairs, take the ramp up to the back. If people want more information, they can find it at afpks.org. Deb, thanks again. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Don't forget, next Sunday we'll be broadcasting live from Topeka, thanks to our friends at Eck Insurance. In the meantime, have a great week and carry on, fellow deplorables.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.